Maybe just to start off, you could give us that sort of 5,000-foot broad overview of what sort of questions you were trying to, or the study was trying to answer going into it, and how some of the different components, including yours, fit into that.
Sure. Genomics is advancing rapidly, particularly what's called ancient genomics, in the sense of modern DNA is, of course, also advancing in its ability to understand. But DNA degrades once people die, and the techniques are being developed and advanced to resurrect that DNA so it can be used for various studies, including historic relationships. So this is what this study is about, is looking at Native Americans, North and South Americans, so it's broad in scope, in terms of groups that had eventually migrated to North America and South America.
And so it's essentially just connecting dots. You have these DNA samples from all these different places, and you know approximately how old they are, and then By connecting those dots, you can paint in that picture of how those cultures may have overlapped. And when you begin doing that, then you can really start to tell a story when you start to understand how cultures overlapped.
Exactly. And so in this case, what I've described so far is not new. But what's been found through this more extensive broad study is that the latter two, the northern and the southern group, probably migrated separately and then intermixed at some point in time. So that complicates the picture quite a bit. And we're talking about glacial times, so where glaciers were and how people moved and so on is all part of the story. The term is now being used, the kelp highway. So both the northern and the southern group probably moved from Siberia at some point in time, with likely a major standstill, that is at least 1,000 years of no movement, and hence there is no group in Siberia that is exactly matches either the northern or the southern group, and then a migration down the coast rather than the Beringia interior view that used to be popular 20, 30 years ago. Earlier, you asked a little bit, why is it significant? So there's this as well, and that is that Native peoples, at least the Dene peoples, Denaina, Atna, and so on, when elders are asked about these earlier times, they will say, we've been here forever. And in a sense, this is substantiating that. 14,000 years is not forever, but it's pretty darn close. So this has implications for land rights and has implications for why First Nations or First Peoples have land rights and rights that may be different from the rest of us who came much, much more recently.
So the part that you helped with on this was identifying remains from the Kenai Peninsula that were able to be analyzed and interpreted as part of the study. Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that part, and I want to emphasize, this was done in complete cooperation with the Kenaichi tribe.
Mm-hmm.
They were in it from the beginning, and it's their people, and nothing would have been done had not the tribe, through its council, weighed the information or what possible information could come, how this information would be treated. And that's critical. That's important. So they were partners along the way. And in this article that came out, they are acknowledged.
You talked about potentially like practical implications of some of these things in terms of land rights and things in that arena. And I'm curious, are there other places where genomic testing and DNA studies have placed a people there at a certain point, and that has been the foundation for legal action that has changed anything?
In Sami land, in northern Scandinavia, in Australia, in New Zealand, those come to mind, where genomic testing has been considered in terms of indigenous rights. But what this can do is contribute to our understanding and from a more accurate understanding of history in its broad sense, we come up with a better understanding